Hey, Anna, you're a big Jeopardy fan, right?
Oh, yeah. Love
Okay,
it.
it's a double Jeopardy. No, wait, a double Jeopardy question.
You mean Daily Double?
All right,
I guess we know
I
who's a
need to
bigger
watch the show
Jeopardy
a little
fan.
more.
Yeah.
Anyway, Daily Double question. How much
It's
would you like to
still,
wager?
okay.
Oh,
Yeah, Daily Double.
Daily Double, I
Okay,
said
sorry.
right. How much would you like to wager for a Daily Double?
All of it. I don't care how much
A
do I have.
true
All of
Daily
it.
Double? You're
I
gonna make
would,
a true Daily
yeah.
Double?
Oh, yeah. My husband would kill me if I did. Yeah, I gotta do the true Daily Double. And I gotta live large.
All right. This favorite son of the Greek god Poseidon is also the name of the planet Neptune's largest moon.
Who is Triton?
You are correct. A
Oh my
true Daily
God,
Double.
I just doubled
Ding,
an
ding, 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 ding,
indeterminate
ding,
amount of
ding.
money. It's so
There's not
exciting.
a ding, ding, ding noise on Jeopardy, is
No,
there?
I actually, it's like a polite golf clap.
Oh,
Like,
that's true. It's right. Well done. A
and
nod from Alec. Well
Alec,
done.
it's all I need in life. Alex Trebek to give me some kind of
Triton.
acknowledgement.
Triton, ladies and gentlemen. Triton.
That was good. That was intense.
From the studios of Cincinnati Public Radio, this is Looking Up. I'm Dean Regas, co-host of Stargazers on PBS.
Heman, and we're both from the Cincinnati Observatory. In this episode, we're talking with blogger, author, and planetary evangelist from the Planetary Society and planetary.org, Emily Lakdawalla. So I was really excited to get that question.
Yeah,
that Jeopardy question.
Folks, she actually got this question like in real time, live.
That's right.
When she was watching this. Totally freaked out her husband because, I mean, it was like amazing. It was
amazing.
Epic.
As the kids say.
That's right.
It was epic.
And so with that topic, we thought, well, let's talk about moons.
That's right.
Moons of the solar system. What do you think?
I think that they get a bad rap.
They do. They get no respect.
They're like the Rodney Dangerfield of the universe. They get
are.
No respect.
I mean, there's Mars, you got Saturn, you got Jupiter, but
yeah.
Who talks about Mimas or...
I don't even know what that is.
Yeah,
nobody,
or,
I guess.
Or Phoebe or...
I like Phoebe.
Yeah.
I also like Io.
Io, that's a good one. Yeah, they're very good. You
know,
know Phobos, Deimos. I mean, there's a whole bunch of them. So we've got all these moons in the solar
system. But nobody cares.
Well, we should.
We
should.
That's
the thing.
Amen.
And the reason why is because these are places that you could actually go visit. All the moons in the solar system are all solid objects. They're all rocky places that you could actually go and stand on and explore.
Are they full of like... poisonous gas and like fire and whatever, like the other planets we were talking about?
Well,
like,
yeah, I mean, you'll die on them eventually. I mean, that's just going to happen. But, you know, you
Yikes.
Can protect yourself and you can, you know, wear your spacesuit. You can bring everything with you. You can land on them.
Why haven't we done that? I don't mean like we, like you and I on the show. I mean like why haven't we as in humanity?
Do you want to go on a trip with me? Is that what you want to go on a trip?
That's how you really
I
can
feel
tell
flattered.
You get along with somebody. I just thought you could help me from getting killed by a gas or something if you and I went to space together.
Well, I mean, so the big thing is these moons are way far away. I mean, so we have our moon, which was the easiest place for us to send humans. So when Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin went there, it was a 3-day trip to get to the moon.
Okay.
They spent a few days on the moon and around the moon, 3 days to get home.
Mm-hmm.
So if we want to
Not
go
terrible.
To the next closest moon, that would be the moons of Mars. So that's Phobos and Deimos. That's a 7-month trip to get to those two.
7 months, okay.
7 months. And then if we want to go to Jupiter's moons, we're talking a couple years. Get to Saturn's moons, a couple more years. But these
I'm losing
present,
interest.
These, so you don't want to go on a...
I don't have the kind of time.
I guess we're not going to go on a multi-year road trip.
We're not going on. That's right. We can't
take even
looking
go
up
get coffee
on the road.
Together. So that's not going to work out.
It's true. It's a little much.
Trip to Phobos. But these
Phobos.
Present... there's so many different moons out there. I mean, you look at just Jupiter. Jupiter has 67 known moons.
Man.
67 orbiting things that go around this planet. Imagine if we had 67 moons in our sky. Wouldn't that be pretty cool?
Like we would look up and see them all?
You can see them all. That would be sweet, wouldn't it?
Yeah, that would be kind of fun. Would they all, do they all look the same? Are they all different sizes? Like, what's the deal?
All different sizes, shapes, distances from the planet.
I'm warming up to the idea.
Yeah. Or go to the moons of Saturn, where you have some moons that are inside the rings. Oh. Some are just outside the rings.
Yeah.
So you'd walk outside your house and have a ring view wherever you are.
Mm-hmm.
See the Saturn's rings setting and rising. And
I'm like, how long is it going to take to get there?
Well, I guess the Cassini spacecraft took about 7 years to get there. Maybe in a few more years we'll be able to go faster. But
okay.
Yeah.
That's cool.
But still, this is what's great is the exploration of the solar system. We're able to send robotic crafts to all these different moons and check them all out.
Right. So what's the difference between like a moon and just like a planet? I mean, can't they kind of be the same? Like, come on.
Yeah. No, that's a good question. I know. We don't want to go in the planet debate here, but.
Or do we?
Well,
just got really close to the microphone. That's right. I was like, do we?
Okay. Relax. Right. We're not talking about Pluto today. That was the other
episode.
You were
dancing around it. I know what you're doing.
What makes a moon and a planet? Well, Yeah, I wish that we'd have some better English majors on these definition committees. But so a moon is just an object that goes around another larger object. So
that's
planets have moons because we have, the moon goes around the Earth.
Right.
We have two moons that go around Mars. We've got 67 that go around Jupiter and 62 that go around Saturn. But we're finding new ones all the time, so we add them to the list. But you don't have to be a planet to have a moon. So
you don't have to be a planet to have a moon. Okay.
Right. So non-planets have moons also. Ugh. I know this work gets really complicated. So Pluto.
Can I get a glossary? This is confusing. Planets,
Pluto,
moons.
Pluto has 5 moons.
Okay. So far.
Other dwarf planets. So far. That's right. There could be more. Other dwarf planets like Haumea has 2 moons and Eris has 1 moon. And then you could get asteroids that have moons, too. So very small objects that are only like dozens of miles across could have their own little moon going around them.
I think of an asteroid as like hurling through space, sometimes directed right towards us, if Hollywood is to be believed. So when you say like an asteroid has like a moon around it, I think of like a little pebble like chasing behind it, like, but are they just hanging out or are they moving?
It's pretty much like that. There's this little asteroid called Ida that has an even tinier asteroid that goes around it, and its name is Dactyl. Dactyl is only about 1 kilometer in diameter.
Okay.
And so you could run around it like in it would be a 5K race to run around it once.
Okay.
It would be so quick. And, But
maybe
it's just well, there wouldn't be as much gravity, so it'd be more like you just try not to fall off.
Really, a 5K or okay,
but,
got it.
But yeah, so this little asteroid has its own little. It's like having a little
Little wingman, like a little sidekick.
Exactly, that's like what it's like.
Yeah.
So there's so many of these moons out there that there's so many different places to explore.
Man, so why are we supposed to care about them though?
Because, when we look at planets, there's only so many planets that we could actually go and colonize. Because if you go to Mercury, you're going to die. You go to Venus, you're going to die.
I'm noticing a theme.
You go to Jupiter.
Let me guess.
Saturn.
I die?
So far, so good.
Hold on. I want to give away the ending, but okay. I die?
What about Uranus and Neptune?
I think I die.
Yeah. Well, those 4 planets, the outer planets, you can't even stand on because they're all gases.
Oh, yeah.
So you would just get there and you'd sink and then...
Die?
You die.
Oh, my God.
There you go.
No wonder you're such a pessimist.
That's right.
This is terrible.
So all we've got is, for other planets other than the Earth, Mars is the only game in town.
Yeah.
But where we can go for moons, there's so many. We've got, just like I said, Phobos, a moon of Mars. We could go to Europa, a moon of Jupiter that's this icy covered moon with an ocean of water underneath of it.
That sounds pretty.
We could go to Titan, that's a frozen methane lake land.
That sounds dangerous.
Yeah, very dangerous. Okay. Yeah, so that one you'd die on too. But still
so back down to 2.
Back down to 2, okay. Still Europa.
Great.
Enceladus, another moon of Saturn with these liquid geysers that are shooting off of it.
Sounds nice, like a spa day sort of.
Ganymede, another moon of Jupiter. Uh-huh. You don't go there because of volcanoes and
more death.
Volcanoes.
Okay, great.
And then we've got Triton, we've got Pluto's moons, Charon, Nix, Hydra. All of these would be interesting to go visit, that's for sure.
Cool. Let's do it.
All right. So the road trip's on?
It's back on.
That's all right. Good. I'll pack it up. I'll pack up the bags.
Oh, God.
When you really want to keep track of everything that's happening up in the skies, there's no better blog to read or no better person to follow on Twitter than Emily Lakdawalla. She's senior editor and blogger at planetary.org and recently wrote about space exploration coming up in 2018. Well, Emily, thanks so much for joining us today.
It's my pleasure.
So you're the senior editor of the Planetary Society. And so tell us about the Planetary Society, what it does, how it started, all the things about it.
Sure. We started in 1980. We were founded by Carl Sagan, Bruce Murray, and Lou Friedman. At least one of those I hope your listeners have heard of. And we were founded at a time when there's a huge amount of public interest in planetary exploration, but not so much funding interest from the Senate. And it's, you know, the things have gone up and down in planetary science since then. And over the years, the Planetary Society has done a lot of work to advocate for space exploration, to educate the public about what's happening out there with all the robots exploring our solar system, and to innovate, to create new technologies or help the further new technologies for exploring space.
And to just keep us up to date on what's going on with all these different missions and everything?
Yeah, well, that's my job. So I'm part of the educate part. I write the blog at planetary.org, and I edit lots of guest bloggers who appear there. I do a lot of work just on Twitter. I interact a lot with both the scientific community and the public. And basically, I see myself as a translator. I like to write about what's happened, what the scientists are doing, and I just translate from academic language that's mumbo-jumbo to a lot of people into language that everybody else can understand.
Oh, yeah, definitely important. Definitely important.
So in terms of you trying to educate and that being sort of your role, how do you teach folks about planets that maybe we haven't been to yet or, you know, we still don't know as much about? I mean, how do you find out information or how do you kind of convey that to people?
Yeah, especially the geology, because you're big into geology, right?
That's right. So one of the wonderful things about covering space exploration is that most space agencies are pretty good at putting out information about what they do. And so, in particular, all of the data is public, at least eventually. You know, all space missions from every country eventually releases all of their data to the public, and sometimes it happens quite quickly. And so I can help people understand what's going on space missions, often by illustrating it with photos that have just come back from Mars or Saturn or wherever. And then I also do things like today, I actually have just finished paying attention to the science team meeting for the New Horizons team. And so I have this opportunity to listen to the scientists actually planning for what's going to be one of the most exciting things about 2018, which is their upcoming flyby of a very small Kuiper Belt object. So this is a mission that flew past Pluto a couple years ago, and it's been flying away from the sun ever since. And they're about to, at the very end of this year, fly by a much smaller Kuiper Belt object, a kind of a relic from the formation of the solar system. And it'll be the first flyby of its kind ever. So it's really exciting to be able to tune into the planning. And I'll be writing a blog post about that later on.
Have they given that object a better nickname yet? I know it's like a long name right now.
Yeah, right now it's referred to as MU69. Because there's this naming convention for recently discovered objects. You have to have some kind of convention that makes a name for it that everybody can agree on using. But down the road, they'll have a better name for it.
So we can't call it Moo yet? Is it too soon? Too soon to call it Moo?
I'm going to call it Peanut between now and then.
Oh,
oh my gosh, that's adorable.
Yeah, you got to get out in front of this.
I love that.
And name these. That's good.
Yeah. Peanut.
It's small. It's tiny.
It's cute. I like it.
The stuff that I really like reading that you write is about Mars. I kind of sense you might have this really great fascination with Mars's past, present, and future. What can you tell us about what we figured out about Mars in the last 10 years or so?
Well, it's been a really cool time in Mars exploration, but it's actually been a little bit more difficult to write about it than it used to be. And it's for a weird reason. It's because there are so many spacecraft exploring Mars right now. There's, let's see if I can list them all. There's Curiosity and Opportunity roving the surface. There's the Mars Odyssey, Mars Express, Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter, Mars Orbiter Mission, MAVEN, and ExoMars Trace Gas Orbiter all orbiting right now. And so that's a lot of spacecraft. And InSight is going to be launching to land on Mars next year. And so there's all of these different kinds of spacecraft returning all these different kinds of data. And the real science that's happening these days is not in, you know, making the first discoveries. It's kind of more difficult stories to tell about how multiple data sets come together to tell you things about the ancient climate during a specific period of time at a specific place on Mars. And so it's really getting down into this level of detail that can be a little bit hard to explain. But it does mean that we're getting a really good picture of the geologic history of Mars was and learning a lot about how water may have, you know, changed the surface in the past, whether there was all that much water around. I think the consensus is now that while, yes, water was important for shaping Mars's surface, that it really did spend most of its history being a very, very dry and cold place, much like it is today.
Well, I never thought of that, of all these missions, these long-lasting, I guess they're like plucky little spacecrafts that they just won't die. Yeah. You know, Opportunity won't die, and Mars Odyssey's still going. And I mean, some of these have been there for more than a decade, and they're still going.
Absolutely. And yeah, so, as we speak, I think it's just a week away, we're going to be at the 14th anniversary of Opportunity's landing on Mars. I mean, that was supposed to be a 90-day mission, so that's just bizarre. I can't. You know, nobody could have imagined that it could have lasted this long.
And you have a new book coming out soon about Mars.
I do. I have my first book is coming out. It's called The Design and Engineering of Curiosity. It's with an academic publisher, and it's about how the rover was originally conceived, how it was developed, built, tested, launched, cruised, landed, and how all of its parts work, both its kind of, you know, engineering systems like its thermal system and how its wheels work and the drill and everything like that, and also how its instruments work. And so originally I was supposed to be writing just one book on Curiosity, but I wound up writing two books because I needed to write this book on how the rover works before I would be able to write a second book on what the rover did on Mars. So my second book is actually coming out next year.
Oh, cool.
But this one is just, yeah. So this one will answer everybody's questions about, you know, what's that thing sticking out of the back? Why? You know,
yeah.
What's wrong with the drill and all those kinds of things? Why do the wheels have holes in them? You know, all those answers to those kinds of questions are in this book.
Wow! Congratulations!
That's
that
really
sounds
exciting.
Great. When's the first one come out?
It should be in March. Okay. I don't have a firm date yet, but it should be early March.
All right. And then the second one next year, and then the trilogy to finish it off. The third one, right?
Why are you pressuring her? She wrote two books.
You know, might as well write a third one. The rover strikes back or something like that. I don't know.
So lazy. She acts. She's like, I wrote a book, and then I wrote another book because I needed the first book. I mean, like, that's amazing.
No, I can't wait to check it out.
So maybe this is.
Neither can I.
So maybe this is obvious since you've done all this great research about Mars and that. But if you could go to another planet or explore another planet, I mean, is Mars where you'd go? Is there another one? What is your kind of, if you could do it, where would you want to go?
Oh gosh, I think it wouldn't be Mars.
Ooh.
People visit Mars and cover Mars because, honestly, it's a relatively easy place to go, and it has a lot to do with Earth. And so studying Mars helps you understand the ancient Earth better. There's a lot of scope for future human exploration. It's relatively easy to get to and operate there. But I'm just as interested in all the other places in the solar system. And so people ask me if I want to go to space, and honestly, my answer is no, because I'd really much rather sit in the comfort of my home office mm-hmm. and look through the eyes of all these robots that are exploring mm-hmm. all over the solar system.
They're doing the hard work for you.
Exactly. Yeah. So I want to get underneath the clouds on Venus and see what its surface looks like. I'd love to go back to Titan and see what its surface looks like, really get down and study those lakes that are on Saturn's moon Titan. I'd like to see the geysers on Triton, which is a moon of Neptune. I'd like to revisit the Uranus system, which we didn't get very good pictures of from Voyager, and go there with an orbiter and really get great images of all of its moons. And you know, every time we explore another small body in the solar system, they're surprising and cool. So I just like to see all these different robotic missions go past places.
Awesome.
Well, thanks so much, Emily. It's a great work what the Planetary Society does. Keep us updated on what's going on in the solar system. And we're really excited about all the missions coming up in the near future.
Thanks for having me.
Well, we've been talking with Emily Lakdawalla, senior editor and blogger for the Planetary Society and planetary.org, and author of the soon-to-be-released The Design and Engineering of Curiosity, How the Mars Rover Performs Its Job, which you can pre-order on Amazon.com now.
Well, the Cincinnati Observatory has been around since the mid-1800s, so you can only imagine the many letters we've received in that time. And some have some very interesting questions or maybe some unique assertions or beliefs. And Dean, you have something to share with us today from said crank file?
Oh, I dug out a good one. This one goes way back. This is a little pamphlet that somebody sent us way back in the 30s.
Ooh.
We're not exactly sure who, why, or whatever, but
Are we ever sure why?
Pamphlet is titled 124 Discoveries Made Between 1892 and 1930 by this person.
Okay.
This is how it's introduced.
Uh-huh.
During my lifetime, scientific and other original research work, which began when I was a child, a baby, crawling on the floor, and which in my 70th year is not yet complete.
That's how it starts. That's a strong start out the gate.
I have discovered these 124 things about life, the universe, and everything.
And felt compelled to write them down and send them to us.
And send it to us.
Okay, great.
And what we're supposed to do with this information,
yeah.
I don't know.
What's
now,
next?
Now, there's some interesting gems. I mean, some of them they get into religion, they get into metaphysics, they get into health. But the astronomy ones, I think, are really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
The first one that, let's see, this is number 84 of the 124 things,
uh-huh.
is I have learned that the moon is only a few hundred miles distant from the Earth.
And is he right or wrong?
Oh, boy.
Just for the listeners.
Oh, for the listeners out there, right.
They might not know.
Well, listeners, no, the moon is 240,000 miles from the Earth, okay. Not a mere few hundred miles.
Yeah, come on, listeners.
His way that he concluded that is based on his own math. So
which is, I'm sure,
it's he forgot to carry some things. That's for sure. So that's number 84.
Okay.
So at least it's buried in there, toward,
yeah.
a little farther.
Yeah, that's not out the gate leading with that one.
Then also that the sun is only a few thousand miles from the Earth.
Also incorrect.
Very good. Yes. Very good. Ding, 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 ding. This is good.
Awesome. It's like Jeopardy again.
That's right. So the sun is a 93 million miles from the
Ooh,
Earth.
Yeah.
So both of these facts
he's
are
way off.
Very, you know, easily proven. And so, yeah. He's
what
way
number
off
was that one?
That was 85. So okay. He followed up 84 with 85.
Now, doubling down.
Now I'm going to go back to one here. Let's see. 70 and 71 are a little disturbing to me because 70 is messing with Saturn.
Oh, no.
He says that Saturn's rings do not actually exist, that what is seen is the result of, caused by, optical reflection. He's saying that the rings of Saturn are a figment of our imagination or an optical illusion at best.
He's now, got some nerve.
Oh,
who does this guy think he
Saturn,
is? That's
right. My favorite planet.
Your
you
very
don't do,
favorite.
I've seen. So he's telling me every time I look through the telescope and I see Saturn's rings,
it's nothing.
It's all a lie.
Wow. What a jerk.
Yeah, and he says the same thing about Jupiter, that the bands on Jupiter you see in a telescope
oh.
are also made up. And so,
fighting words.
Where does he get all this stuff? I don't, you know, it's like
Dean from when he was a baby crawling
on the ground.
70 years.
That's true.
He couldn't have been clearer.
Yeah, I guess it's a good point. So, but what are we supposed to do with this information? That's the thing.
I guess bury it in the crank file, well, it sounds like.
And dig it out a little bit later. I mean, but there, so.
Was he right about anything?
Well,
I dare ask.
This is where we get to the one that there's a little bit of truth. And I can't believe that he got this one right.
Every now and then a squirrel finds a nut.
Yeah,
know?
That's right. Well, so number 70 says Saturn's rings don't exist.
That's
71 says the bands of Jupiter don't exist.
Also a lie.
72 that Mars's canals do not exist, that what this scene is also a result of optical reflection. Now, he's actually right in this one. And I know it hurts. It hurts me that he got one right here because at this point, when astronomers were looking through our telescopes, we could see these little crisscrossy lines on Mars. And so we really thought they were canals, mm-hmm. that they were built by Martian intelligence to get water from one place to the other. Mm-hmm. And so he is actually right that those lines do not exist, product of optical
reflection.
Well, not
optical
reflection.
It's illusion.
It's our brains trying to put these little pieces together when we're squinting through the telescope. So, congratulations. He did get one correct out of 124. What does he win? Nothing.
A permanent spot in the crank file.
Permanent spot in the crank file. Well, we appreciate these. And so we'll keep digging more out from the crank file and see which ones are right, see which ones are wrong.
That's it for this episode of Looking Up. Thanks to Emily Lakdawalla from planetary.org for being our special guest. Get in touch with us. We're on Facebook. Go to facebook.com/lookingupwvxu. And we're on Twitter at lookingup podcast, or drop us a note at lookingup@wvxu.org.
You can ask us a question, give us a topic suggestion, or ask your kids what they'd like to ask an astronomer or scientist, and we can try to answer them on future episodes.
And remember to subscribe to Looking Up on iTunes, and please take a moment to rate or comment on us there, or on Stitcher, or from wvxu.org/lookingup. Our theme song and additional music is by Why, that's W-H-Y ? From their album Moline, courtesy of Joyful Noise Recordings and Terror Bird Media.
Looking Up is a production of Cincinnati Public Radio. Kevin Reynolds is our producer, Josh Elstro is our engineer, and Jim Nolan provided additional technical assistance.
Thanks for listening. I'm Anna Heeman.
And I'm Dean Regas. Keep looking up.